Grade 6 Conference, Lecture 49, The Roman Republic. Now, in the old days, the study of Greece was something that had to have within it the three P's, and the study of Rome had to carry within it the study of the three C's. So the three P's were the Persian War, Pericles, and the Peloponnesian War. And these three elements are indeed touched upon, as you may remember, in the Grade 5 online conference. Grade 6, we're going to look at the three C's, Coriolanus, Cincinnatus, and Camillus. And these are figures whom Kovacs does not take up in his book, and I'll present them to you not because I think you necessarily must bring them, but because they can exemplify the way in which Rome can be presented. So here again, I'll give you a little feeling of how I would bring this to my class. So the Tarquins had been banished from Rome. Brutus had served as the first leader, and the Romans were determined that never again would they have a king, and they tried different forms of governing themselves. And what amounted to the basic form that was to work for them, more or less, up and down, for almost 500 years, which is pretty good as far as a form of government goes, was that the plebeians were given very minimal rights, but they had enough that they were willing to work their farms or do the menial tasks in the city, and above all, to serve in the army. And there were different ways tried at different times to keep the plebeians enthusiastic about military service or to give them a certain amount of reward if they were able to serve their land well. But power was basically in the hands of the older land-owning wealthy families, the patricians. From their ranks, the senators were chosen, and the senators, in turn, elected the consul, or the two consuls of Rome, who became the executive leaders, very much like our president. Now, students, I want you to think about this in an election year, when you see how the American president gets elected. It's actually much more the way the Romans went about electing people than it was the way the Greeks did. Rome was not a democracy. It was not that everyone had a vote. Only those who were full citizens of Rome, that is to say the patricians who had wealth and land, really had the power to vote. And those patricians elected senators. And the senators then had the right to represent the larger number of patricians and in turn to vote for the consuls. And they then really concentrated the rule and the power. In times of a real emergency, one of those consuls or someone else completely different could be appointed dictator. A term that we hear a lot in the modern world. But that was meant to be a temporary role to get Rome out of usually some great military emergency or even something like a disaster. So there'd be a dictator as well. But notice there was no direct election. We have something in the United States called the Electoral College. So that when a person votes in New York State or in California or in Michigan, that individual is actually voting not really for the person on the ballot. They are voting for an elector or a group of electors who will in turn then be appointed to decide who the president will be. It's much more like the Senate voting for the councils than it is a direct vote. And often that isn't quite understood, and in recent years, that's created nearly a great crisis in the election of the president when George Bush ran against Al Gore. And the decision, in fact, could not be fully made by the Electoral College, could not even be determined by the American Congress, the American Senate, but instead had to go then to the Supreme Court. We'll learn more about that in eighth grade, but remember that the antecedents for this are in Rome. But in these years of the Republic, with the conflicts between the poor and the rich, the newer Romans and the older Romans, some very interesting individuals were to arise again and again who tried in one way or another to solve some of these problems, or perhaps to make capital of them, to use them to their own advantage. And I want to share with you the deeds of three very eminent Romans, and we'll see how each in his own way tried to work with the Roman government and to bring some greater glory either to Rome or perhaps only to himself. So our first C is Caius Marcius. He was a brave patrician, and he helped to capture the city of Corioli. And for this, as often happened to great military commanders, he was named after his victory and was called then Coriolanus. He had no use for the plebeians. He felt that they had too much power and that their protests or veiled threats of violence against the patricians could often get them their way. And in fact, in a time of famine, when a small quantity of corn was meant to be divided among the people, Coriolanus spoke out very openly and begged that none should be given to the plebeians unless they surrendered their rights and essentially made themselves slaves to the patricians. Well, even the patricians were not about to accept something that extreme. And there was such indignation against Coriolanus's arrogance towards the plebeians that he had to flee the city. He took leave of his mother, his wife, and his children. They would stay in Rome, and off he went into an exile. But he went directly to the Volscians, who were at that time strong enemies of the Romans, and he quickly organized an army. They were grateful to have him. His boldness and his military strategies were well known, and he led them directly to Rome. He was going to conquer his own city, something which at that time was almost unthinkable. But as the army approached, the priests and augurs went to meet him. Leaving Rome, they came to him and begged him not to invade his own city, but he refused to listen to them. And then out from the city walls came his mother and his wife, clad in deep mourning garb, dressed in black, and each one of them holding one of his children. As they drew near, he ran out and met his mother. She besought him and said, "If you must destroy Rome, then please begin by slaying me. Let me know whether I stand in your company as a prisoner or as your mother, whether I'm speaking to an enemy or to my son." So although the priests and the leaders of Rome could not soften Coriolanus's heart, he was overcome by the entreaties, by the wishes of his mother and by the sight of his wife and his children. And he exclaimed to his mother, "Mother, you have saved Rome, but you have left and lost your son." And with that, he turned from the city and returned to his troops, the Volscians. Now, they were expecting him to lead them in the conquest of Rome. Instead, in their eyes, he proved himself to be a coward and a traitor to them. So he had betrayed his own city, and now he had betrayed the Volscians as well. And in anger and panic, they rushed towards him and killed him. And thus ended the life of Coriolanus. Now, the character of Cincinnatus is quite different. He was a farmer, though he was a wealthy patrician. He was happy living away from Rome. He had a small 4-acre farm on the banks of the Tiber River. And there senators would go and visit him. He would not serve in the Senate, but they appreciated his wisdom and his objectivity about life in Rome. So here was a man, unlike Coriolanus, not caught up in the heat of battle and not looking for any special power or fame. But as it happened, even Rome's great generals failed her now and then. And one day there was a great danger facing Rome. The Roman army had been ambushed and was shut up by the Equians in a little valley. And there they had to surrender or starve to death. A few soldiers were able to escape from this trap, and they brought the news to the city. The Senate met, and at once it decided the only person left with real military understanding and leadership qualities was Cincinnatus. He must be dictator. So messengers were sent to bring Cincinnatus to the city, and they found him plowing his fields in the homely dress of a farmer. As soon as he got the message, he asked his wife to bring him his toga. And we've heard about the toga and what it represented, that only patricians could wear it. It's 18 feet of wool, and what that meant to carry that on one's body. So he put the toga over his farm clothing. He washed his face, washed his hands, walked out again to his farm where the messengers were waiting, and they saluted him as dictator, as the absolute leader of Rome. And there he went by boat to Rome, and he ordered everyone who was capable of bearing arms to meet him at sunset and bringing provisions for 5 days. So, of course, these were no longer the most physically fit soldiers. These would be older men and perhaps teenagers, perhaps even some as young as you, who already were beginning a military training and were capable of bearing arms, who knew how to use a sword or throw a spear. And off they went with him. And at the head of his army, they traveled all night long, not ceasing, so that they surprised the Equians in the morning. There the Equians were holding the Romans captive in a small valley, but suddenly a huge division of Romans approached them from the other side, and the Equians, who had trapped the Romans, now found themselves trapped between two Roman armies. There was a battle cry that the Romans used, which would carry great distances, and those who were shut up in the valley heard the familiar battle shout, and they knew that help had come. And so they rushed out towards the Equians. Cincinnatus and his troops rushed towards them, and within a few hours, the Equians were vanquished. And the Romans returned with the spoils of war, which would be shared among even the poorest of the soldiers, proud of their victorious leader. And within a day, after taking his triumph through the city, Cincinnatus resigned as dictator and went back to work on his farm. Very different picture from that of Coriolanus. Maybe we could have a discussion about these two individuals and which one would you want in what kind of circumstance if you yourself were a senator having to make a decision about the leadership of Rome. And now we'll go on to the third C and some other considerations of the Roman Republic.